It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970 is the Rick Emerson show. I've got this from our good friend Todd the Corpse. He's a final thought here. Rick, as a child, I too was terrified of the angel hair that came with the nativity set. I remember my mama was asking me to help set it up when we decorated, and she would always tell me to be really careful because the spun glass angel hair would cut you. I could never figure out why in the world we would decorate the top of our piano with dangerous, sharp, inhalable, fibrous glass. Still to this day, I have visceral, scared reactions whenever I see that stuff. Todd, although, see, now, it is essentially the same stuff that they use to make fiberglass with. So, anyway. It's 503-733-2970. We've got Tim Riley coming up later on. We've got Ed McCarthy, who's going to weigh in. Because we don't have a Pacific Northwest correspondent from CNN. Ed McCarthy's going to weigh in about these nitwits who are up on Mount Hood later on. Dennis Pitchenbarger's going to be here. We've got to do another edition of Spot the Fake Metal Lyrics for L.A. Guns tickets, etc. and so forth. I'm just going to get these in no particular order. We'll get Joe and Kelly in a moment. Scott, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, guys. I can be your Northwest CNN correspondent for sure. No, I have a question. I'm wondering if you guys have heard what time Axl Rose actually went on stage last night at the Rose Garden, because there's a big warning on the Rose Garden's website saying that TriMet doesn't run as late as the show is going to go, basically.
He went on. I talked to Chris Neath, and he's the guy who kind of got me the tickets at the goal last night. He works for OregonLive.com and so forth, and he got some tickets for people at the Rose Garden. Anyway, so if you went to the Ticketmaster website, they were listing, as you said, the time that the TriMet quit running. And they were saying, well, look, TriMet quit running at 2, so find your own way home. And apparently the staff of the Rose Garden was actually planning on having a caterer on hand to provide breakfast for the Rose Garden staff, because they were speculating that the concert might start so late and run so long the Rose Garden staff would have to be fed in the morning.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent.
He went on, Axel went on around noon, around midnight. I would say probably 5 to midnight. I left around 1:30. And they were, according to the set list that somebody emailed me, there was about 5 songs left after that. So I would guess it went a little after 2.
So how much of a delay was there between Helmet and Guns?
I don't know, because I think Helmet, there were 3 acts. There was Helmet, and then there was Sebastian Bach, and then there was Axl Rose. We got there late enough, because I don't really care about opening acts, and I especially don't care about Helmet. So I got there late enough to miss Helmet. We got there just as Sebastian Bach. He probably had 4 or 5 songs left, and then I would guess there was probably 40 minutes between Sebastian Bach and Axl Rose.
That's actually a lot less than I would have predicted.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, unless you consider the fact that it's a concert not even starting until midnight, which is one thing if you're at a bar and shows start at 11:30 or midnight because they want people to drink and the bar doesn't close till 2 a.m. and they got to have entertainment till the end. I mean, I can't remember the last time I went to see a major rock act of whatever era where the concert where he didn't even go on until almost midnight. It's just insane.
It is Axl. He's like the Pol Pot of rock, and you know, the fact that he's making a public appearance is amazing. I mean,
the Pol Pot of rock.
Did he have a bottle of Jack Daniels on stage with him?
No. It was completely uninteresting. I'll talk a little bit more about this later when Dennis Pitchenbarger is here. But the thing about the Guns N' Roses, so called, and it's not really Guns N' Roses.
No, it's not. And Izzy Stradlin got the best deal out of that, because he's writing songs for both GNR and Velvet Revolver.
Well, Izzy Stradlin was the musical force behind Guns N' Roses. Axl Rose was very much the personality force and the persona and the guy who drove that band. But musically speaking, Izzy Stradlin, who was the rhythm guitarist, he wrote most of the songs that people remember from Guns N' Roses. He was the guy who really drove their sound, forged the sound. And you're right, man, he cashed out early on. He got it on top. He didn't stick around for the big bloated Vegas-y Guns N' Roses. The thing about Guns N' Roses last night is it wasn't even that it was bad. It was just uninteresting.
So Tommy Stinson, he's a replacement. He was playing bass for that, right?
Yeah, the bass player was Tommy Stinson for the replacement. He had three guitarists, one of whom was Robin, what's his name, Robin Fink from Nine Inch Nails.
Guy? Yeah.
Yeah, he had two keyboardists, one of whom is Dizzy Reed, who was kind of there back in the day, and then he had some drummer I didn't know.
So, okay, all right. I was discussing this with a friend of mine last night. Gilby Clark makes claim that he was in GNR. But he didn't appear on either Appetite for Destruction or User Illusion live. So technically,
he's not actually a
former GNR guy, right?
Gilby Clark played on the Spaghetti Incident, which is an album of covers. Izzy Stradlin had it. Why do I know all of this? Izzy Stradlin had originally cut all the rhythm guitar tracks for the Spaghetti Incident, which is their last studio release. Sarah's mouthing that Ed McCarthy
he
said.
He is waiting.
He said, take your time. This is a quote from Ed
but
McCarthy.
But he is at home.
I told Scotty not to call him until we were wrapping up with these calls. You were there in the hallway.
It's God, not my when you're talking to Scotty.
It's not my fault.
Hey, I'm sorry. I don't mean
No.
Time away
from no,
okay.
It's not you.
No. And I'm not. And I don't mean to take it out on you. I'm just saying, in the hallway just during the break, I told Scotty, I'm like, as you hear me wrapping up with these calls, get a hold of Ed, Scotty. Blah, 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 blah. Izzy Stradlin cut all the rhythm tracks for Spaghetti Incident, but then he quit, and so they went and in true rock and roll fashion erased everything he'd done and had Gilby Clark record over it. And so Gilby Clark is sort of a tracer.
Yeah, that doesn't count. That's kind of like saying that Jason Newsted was better than Cliff Burton.
Dude, you don't have to convince me, brother. So,
not agree.
This will sum up the whole thing last night, and then I'll move on. Guns N' Roses last night, it's a 7-person band and Axl, and the band was technically flawless, played every note correctly, didn't miss a beat, did everything letter perfect, but with a band like Guns N' Roses, that's not the way it's supposed to be. It doesn't sound letter perfect on the record, they never sounded letter perfect in concert back in the day, it's not supposed to sound letter perfect and flawless.
It makes it sound
airless.
Did they do like 7 million guitar solos? Did each guy have a guitar solo?
Every guy had a guitar solo, I'm sure there was a drum solo after I left, there was a piano solo, it was tedious, and I'm glad I didn't pay for the ticket.
Lucky you. Hey, thanks, man.
Thank you, Scott. All right, here you go. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to snap. It's
Scotty.
I didn't
think you were snapping.
No, I just... No,
I just ignore you. It's okay.
No,
it doesn't hurt my feelings.
Scotty's upset because his son has a girl's name. We'll get Joe and Kelly in a second. I'm sorry for the delaying. This is all... It's Scotty's fault. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Ed McCarthy. Hello, Ed.
Hey, he told me. He says, we got a couple of more calls. And I said, I'm fine with that. Don't worry about that.
See, and I appreciate that, but by the same token, I know that you are calling us off the clock out of the goodness of your heart because you are a good person, Ed McCarthy.
Oh, it doesn't matter, please.
Well, I'm just saying. Well, because I know you've been on hold. Well, let's talk about... You seem to end up getting saddled with all these Pacific Northwest stories every time. And by the way, I'd like to apologize for the stupidity of so many people in the Northwest or people who come to the Northwest and they behave stupidly. Right now, the latest are these three guys, two of them from Texas, one from New York, who decided to climb straight up Mount Hood, which is 2.5 miles of ice, by the way.
I was in transit, by the way. Anything new on that?
I think the new thing is that they haven't found them. They've got Black Hawk helicopters who are trying to go find them, but you will not know this, but I will fill you in. There is a bad history of Mount Hood and Black Hawk helicopters.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. Boy, I remember that, and I saw the video today, so I remembered that, and that was horrible.
There was a guy in a crevasse that the helicopters, Black Hawk helicopters, went to pull him out. They got too close. Blade hit the mountain. Everybody died. And so they're reticent. They're really reluctant to send those helicopters up there to get these guys. But, I mean, it just seems like this is a thing you ought to... I mean, look, Mount Hood is, as I said, it's a big sheet of icy rock. It's a thing you ought to think through a little more clearly before you decide, as they said it here, to have a fast, quick climb. There is no fast, quick climb up Mount Hood in December.
No, absolutely not.
So,
and it was so bad yesterday they had to call off that rescue, and they resumed it this morning. But you know, they had the winds and the snow, and it's just it's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
You know, just people will do this; they love to do it, and you know, we've talked about this. People that live on the edge, but it's tough.
No, it's true. And so, how long have they been? Have they been up there?
A couple of days.
And so, I mean, I don't know whether they were prepared.
Sunday, I guess. Was it last? The last call was Sunday with the cell phone.
Right.
And they were supposed to meet at some lodge, and they never did, so.
And so it's unclear about whether they were really prepared for it, whether they took up adequate supplies, the blah, blah, blah. You know, it's So it remains to be seen. But, you know, eventually, and I don't know whether these guys went off the path or whether they deviated from where they were supposed to go. But it does seem like, to even the casual observer, this seems like, as we were saying earlier, that nature does have ways of saying, stay away.
And well, yeah, nature can fool you, too. I mean, you know, you could take a wrong path. Felt bad about that other situation in Oregon where the apparently vandals had taken that big, you know, barrier that they had that went across the road. So
right.
You had a choice to go left or go right, and he went left, and that was the wrong way because the thing was wide open. Had it been shut, you know, it might have been a different result. So
absolutely. All right. Well, check in with us. Let us know if anything else happens. Otherwise, I'm sure we will speak to you in the very near future, my friend.
We will, Rick. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. There you go. And there's a CNN radio correspondent. Ed McCarthy. All right. It's 503-733-2970. Kelly, you're on the Rick Emerson. Oh, is this Kelly from earlier?
No.
Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. Hello, Kelly?
Yeah?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was mistaking you with a woman named...
Oh, no, I'm the D-Man Kelly. Me and Dale were arguing about the war and stuff.
Who's Dale?
Well, he called in earlier. Okay, this is my question. Last night, they had Gordon Smith on TV.
Yeah.
And he said, I would have never voted to the declaration to go to war if
right.
I didn't know Saddam didn't have weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
So Congress had to vote for him to go in there.
They voted to authorize military action. They voted they voted to give George W. Bush the authority to take military action in Iraq.
Want my $100?
As required by the Constitution of the United States, which is, and I'm trying to remember exactly where it is. It's like Section 8 or something. It's Article 1, Section 8, Section 9, something. There is some clause that lays out exactly how Congress must declare war, and that has never happened. There has never been, and regardless of how one feels about our current military operations, there has never been a formal congressional declaration of war against Iraq. In fact, I don't think there has been a formal declaration of war since World War II.
Answer me this one. He's trying to tell me that we are still officially at war with Korea.
You know, somebody said that, and I don't know whether that's true or whether that's just one of those urban legends, because I'm not really sure that we were at war with Korea. I think Korea was a police action. I don't think Korea was actually a war.
Now he's saying he doesn't think Korea was actually a war.
Oh, God.
We got each other, right?
I mean, Bruce Agler here. Yeah, it's hard to say. We're talking about several separate things. A, I don't think Korea was a war. I think it was a police action. So I think that whatever it is, it still remains. B, I think we did have a cessation of hostilities with Iraq. There was a ceasefire. B, the Congress did authorize George W. Bush to take military action. There has never been a congressional declaration of war against Iraq, to my knowledge. And so is there really $100 riding on this?
No, he never shook my hand at the beginning.
Come on.
He wouldn't do it. I guess I wasn't so convinced that it was
all shenanigans.
Hold on.
I'll just press build up.
Hold on, Kelly. So you're saying that he never shook hands?
No, he didn't shake hands.
Let me talk to Dale for a second.
Okay, here you go. Here, Dale. Oh, trickery.
Now, have you guys bet in the past?
Yes. Yeah, so, see, my friend Kelly, when he gets a hold of a bone, he does not let go.
Let me ask you this. In the past, when you've bet, have you shaken hands?
In the past when we bet, have we shaken hands? No, because usually what we do is one of us goes home and Googles whatever the topic is we're discussing, and then the other one gives him the nyan-nyan-nyan-nyan on the next day.
Here's what I'm saying, though, and we have to speak now as men. Speaking together as men and as men of honor, is it generally accepted that a Dale Kelly bet requires a handshake?
Is it generally a bet has to have a handshake? Yeah, but you know what? I'm getting a pack of cigarettes or a lunch or at least the sheepish look down the ground from him. He's already doing it.
So confused. I have no idea what's going on. Hold on.
You're giving up that $100 pretty easily.
Yeah, hold on. Put Kelly back on.
Okay, just a second.
Jesus Christ. All right. All right. Kelly?
Yeah.
Okay, now, again, as I have to say, we have to speak together honestly as men here and as men of honor. So I'm asking you now, as one honorable man to another, in the past, in the Kelly-Dale relationship, in your relationship...
Yeah, we usually shake hands or something.
Okay, but
we'll Google it, or we'll make good on it.
Is it generally accepted that...
Whoever's wrong.
Is it... Oh, and now we lost him. Oh, we lost his phone.
Oh, no.
Now I'll never know who wins the $100. That's
I don't think either of them are ready to fork over the $100.
Yeah, but, well, I'm just saying, I'm with you. That Dale was seeding that pretty early on. All right. Joe, you're on the Rick Emerson show.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
What I wanted to say was if you go back and look, Congress actually debated the topic twice, and they gave him the authority to use whatever force he deemed necessary.
Right, but that's not...
So they basically abrogated their responsibility or their authority to declare war, because if he deems the force necessary as an actual declaration of war, he can do that because they gave him that authority.
Well, they gave him the authority to use military force. That's not the same thing as declaring a war.
Well, they gave him the authority to use whatever force he deemed necessary,
yeah.
And I believe that... specific wording of it.
I understand that. I'm just saying they never declared war. That was the argument. They were betting $100 on whether we declared war, and we never have.
Well, it's actually a debate that they're having right now in several different places because they need a formal declaration of war to actually go to war.
Okay, I can end the debate. We never declared war. The end.
Okay.
All right. There you go. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
All right. Good God. They're debating it. They're not debating it anywhere. They're debating it in several places. The same places they're debating evolution. And gravity. All right, Jesus Christ. All right, it's 503. And I never found out about the freaking $100 bet. Good God Almighty. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. All right, let's see. What have we got here? Oh, I got the Week in Geek, so I should get that out of the way. Play the Week in Geek. We'll take a break. We'll come back with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. We have two pair of tickets for L.A. Guns. We got to get those given away today. Dennis Pitzenbarger is going to be here later on as well, so you stay right there. Don't go anywhere. We'll try to get an answer to this Korean War business, just because it's going to bug me. It's going to be one of those things that bugs me now if I don't get an answer. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio.
And now, the Rick Emerson Show presents the Week in Geek.
Your friend in the neighborhood geek here, Aaron Duran of geekinthecity.com, with an extra dorky edition of the Week in Geek. With J.J. Abrams now officially signed on as co-writer and director of the next Star Trek film, it would seem that Matt Damon is once again expressing interest in the role of James Tiberius Kirk. And while Mr. Damon may indeed look the part, only one man can pull off the Shatner chop. Some sad news in this Week in Geek. Martin Nodell, creator of the original Green Lantern, passed away at the age of 91. Although not as well known as Bob Kane or Stan Lee, Martin Nodell nonetheless left his mark on the comic book world and will be missed. Although it still won't help you pick up chicks, now is your chance to have a little bit of immortality in the world of Warcraft. Working with Upper Deck Entertainment, Blizzard announced a contest allowing one lucky winner to have their favorite screenshot turned into the newest card in the World of Warcraft collectible trading card game. You can find out more at www.blizzard.com. I'm Aaron Duran of geekinthecity.com, reminding you that even when Jesus saves, he still takes half damage. This has been
The Week in Geek. Only from the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio.
Hello, it's the Rick Emerson Show. Rick, this email says, I think we were all warned against angel hair when we were young. Apparently it will maim and kill you. Probably no worse off than fiberglass insulation. Somehow I seem to remember that angel hair was the same thing as the drug angel dust, but I may be wrong. Yes, you are wrong. Let's all ring the nativity set with angel dust. Nativity sets are common to many Christian denominations, including Mormons and other religions as well, not just Catholics. Catholics only have the sad-looking Jesus. It is true. Catholic nativity sets, everybody just looks so depressed. everybody just looks so down about it. Everybody just says, well, here I am having given birth to the Son of God. And then everybody's just
Well, you're supposed to be unhappy as a Catholic.
Yes.
People don't leave the church smiling.
No, as Eddie Izzard once noted, that Catholics are fantastic because they're the only ones who can take the Alleluia and make it sound like something depressing. It's Alleluia. And it's just like the saddest, most depressing Alleluia ever.
But you're aching from sitting in wooden seats, and every so often you get to kneel down and hurt your knees.
Oh, man. And I don't know about you all, but when I went to church, they didn't have the padded kneelers either. Nope. The kneelers were just flat, hard wood.
Yeah, that was painful.
Love your pain, love your suffering. Ladies and gentlemen, pay heed to your new God, Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth,
booyah!
This is Tim Riley.
So our top story continues to be these damn fools on Mount Hood, who everyone's supposed to feel sorry for.
It's a day of courage and
It
strength.
Is a day of courage and prayers,
courage,
said the brother of one of the climbers who held a press conference moments ago. If anyone can survive these conditions, it'll be my brother. That's just the kind of fighting spirit he has. So they're still up there and costing thousands of dollars. And they come to our area and they just cause trouble. Let's talk about some real Northwesterners, what they're doing today. From Centralia comes word police believe that some kind of accident has resulted in a firework exploding inside the mouth of a Centralia man.
What?
Police believe it was some kind of accident that resulted in a firework exploding inside the mouth of a Centralia man.
There is no accident that leads to a firework being set off in your mouth.
A 41-year-old man was home alone last night. He shouldn't have been left home alone, even though he's 41.
He should have been a mountain.
When the firework exploded in his mouth, causing damage to his face, he was found by a neighbor. What was left of him was flown to a Harborview Medical Center in Seattle.
Just a jaw. Mm-hmm. Just a lower... Well, no, but you can't... No, you're... Look, you just
That's
did
all
that,
there is.
You just did that thing.
That's all there is.
You read this fantastic story.
I did.
And then as I was saying, whoa, like, I didn't even get the what out of it. I was like, whoa. And your hand, you've already put the garbage, the story in the trash.
Yes.
I need more, Tim Riley.
That's all there is to it, because all the pros... I mean, everyone who works in the media has been sent to this mountain to feel sorry for these people who come from outside of the area. These carpetbaggers who come here.
Interlopers from the south. I want to know.
They should go home and ride their bucking broncos and stay out of our mountains.
Seriously. Really, were truer words ever spoken? I don't understand how the firework came to be in his mouth, quote, by accident.
We don't know that yet.
Oh, that's it. Because
it's being investigated.
Because there are no journalists to cover, because they're all covering these nitwits who are up in an ice cave somewhere, yep, wishing they'd gone to the Bahamas instead.
Every camera is focusing on a snowy mountain.
Where nothing's going to happen.
No.
Really? They're not moving right now. Look, if I can give you one bit of a guaranteed knowledge right here, it's that I don't know what you're pointing your camera hoping to get. What do you think they're going to be doing? Coming out doing cartwheels and jumping? They're in an ice cave deciding whether to eat the thigh or the buttock first. Mm-hmm. That's it, friend.
So there you go. Well, okay.
I mean, we'd love to cover these other interesting news stories. We'd love to have things that were colorful and interesting and full of fantastical whimsicality. But apparently we can't do that because media resources have been diverted by two goddamn Texans and a New Yorker.
Darn them.
Fine. Fine.
But here's something that should interest everyone. A Portland area girl has won the Oscar Mayer contest. A Portland area kindergarten student has been selected one of five grand prize winners in a national contest sponsored by Oscar Mayer. Brooke Eric Orno of Happy Valley won Oscar Mayer's Sing the Jingle Be a Star contest. That means a six-year-old will receive $5,000 and star in a national Oscar Mayer television commercial.
Does that mean we don't get to hear those fantastic spots anymore that have the, I wish the moon not come out, we there.
Yeah, so she's going to do her version.
All right.
She has a daughter of somebody who works at K2. Gee, I wonder if that contest was fixed.
And by the way, it should be noted that Scotty sang the jingle incorrectly the other day when we had him in, because he left out the my baloney has a first name. It's OSCAR part. Does she rap it, really? Do you know? Does she rap the Oscar Mayer jingle? Scotty's saying that he has some knowledge here. Do you know? Does she does it as a hip hop version? All right. Well, there you go.
Well, for the first time in more than a decade, more people are heading out of Sunny California than coming in. The figures show, don't ask me how they find this out, or count them, 29,000 more people left California than arrived last year. Where are they going? Arizona, Nevada, Washington State, and yes, Oregon.
Are they just having the plane drop them off right on top of Mount Rainier or something?
Mount Hood.
Can you take me right to the top of St. Helens and just leave me there?
Yeah, fantastic. Clergy Watch.
Here's your Clergy Watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio program. We'll get some of these calls here in a while.
Oh, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body.
Drop me right into a snow-covered ditch. Thanks.
Ooh. Because I got to have faith. Oh, I got to have faith.
Yeah, just leave me off Mountain Where I Can Be Eaten by Coyotes.
It's Tim Riley.
In a tearful videotape message Sunday to his flock, the senior pastor of a thriving evangelical megachurch in Denver, there are plenty of them out there, plenty of God-fearing folks, he confessed to sexual relations with another man and quit. Now, a month ago, the Reverend Paul Barnes of the Grace Chapel of Douglas County preached to his 2,100-member congregation about integrity and grace in the aftermath of Ted Haggard's drug and gay sex scandal. Well, now, he himself joins him as a fallen evangelical minister who preached that homosexuality was a sin, but grappled with a secret hidden life. I have struggled with homosexuality since I was a 5-year-old boy, said Barnes in a 32-minute video.
I've struggled and wrestled with homosexuality.
And enjoyed every moment.
I have rolled around on the floor, my limbs entwined around homosexuality, covered in a warm bath of canola oil.
I can't tell you the number of nights I've cried myself to sleep, begging God to take this away. He doesn't explain what this is.
homosexuality.
I was going to say, I had a more graphic answer, but yours is probably better.
When Barnes experienced a Christian conversion at the age of 17, it gave him a glimmer of hope. But his homosexual feelings never went away.
Scotty is noting that he's wrestled with the snake of homosexuality.
He said...
An evil, deceitful snake, Scotty.
Well done. He said he cannot accept that a person is born that way.
Oh, of course.
Barnes said he has asked God many times why he was called to the ministry of the Start Grace Chapel, carrying a horrible burden of homosexuality.
It warms the heart, doesn't it? Dan Savage, by the way, had a great column a couple weeks ago about the, what's his name, Dan Haggard, that guy. Because he's another one who I think that they've got him in a room somewhere right now just slamming his testicles in a drawer. And he's shocking him in the forehead with a tire iron, trying to cure him of his homosexuality. And clearly, I mean, the point that Dan Savage made, which is really, he just puts the finest point on it, is that, really, you'd think if God was going to cure anybody, right? If the magical healing hand of Jesus could come down and, take the evil, remove the evil homosexual snake from your life, you would think that, you know, that Reverend Haggard would be exactly, he'd be the prime candidate for that. So, because he's out there, he's a beacon, a shining, glistening, throbbing, pulsating, thrusting beacon for millions and millions of people. So, you figure if Jesus can't be bothered to cure him, then really, you know, really, what are we to do?
Fantastic.
There you go. Gay. Gay is the goddamn day is long. There you go. Your clergy watch. Fantastic.
Because I got to have faith. Oh, I got to have
Fantastic. Rick, there's people just sending in observations about the hiker. Well, let me get a couple of them. Let me clear out these Korean calls here. I have two errands here. We'll get errand number one. Hello.
Hey. Hey, Rick. Memory serves me right, and I'm not sure after last weekend all the brain cells are still there, but I believe there's a temporary ceasefire in place from the Korean War that's never been really formalized or finalized, so it's kind of this weird contentious standby, and I think the last time we actually declared war was the first Gulf War.
Yeah, all I remember is that they started to tear the swamp down, and then they had to figure out who took the still home after Korea, and then Hawkeye and Margaret had that big kiss, and then all the musicians that Charles taught to play the magic flute came back dead.
And they wrote goodbye in stone.
And then I cried. And then there was an ad for Cheese Whiz. That's
then
all
it was Aftermash.
Aftermash, which is the worst spinoff ever. Ever!
I don't know, Joni Loves Chachi, I think, was one of the worst.
Well, there's always that Trapper John MD, another good one.
See, Trapper John MD is weird, though, because that is technically a spinoff, and yet it has nothing to do with MASH, although it is, theoretically speaking. That is kind of the people kind of forget about that. That show doesn't get the attention it deserves because it is a bizarre, weird idea for a spinoff that it takes place like 35 years in the future and like nobody ever mentions MASH. There's no, I don't think in the entire run of Trapper John M.D. they ever made mention of the 4077th, and it is the same character. It's all very strange. And there you go. All right. So we are technically still at war with the godless Koreans.
Well, not at war. It was a police action.
We're still unhappy with them.
That's correct.
We could go over there and beat their asses right now if we wanted to, and we'd legally be in the clear.
Well, since, you know, our glorious leader has stretched our military so thin, the Koreans will probably come over the border now and actually whoop our ass.
You know, that's an un-American attitude, sir, and we won't have it on the Rick Emerson Show.
Well, you know, there you go.
Speak of our glorious leader with respect.
Not going to happen.
I want my Uncle Charlie sausage.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
There you go. That's Aaron. Let's get quickly these, and then we'll return to the Ministry of Truth. Don, hello, sir.
Hey, Rick, I've got the definitive answer on the Korean War for you.
Okay, because it was keeping me up nights. What's the definitive answer?
Okay, the Korean War was listed as a United Nations police action.
Oh, okay, in which we were,
we
as always,
under the United Nations.
And as always, it was a United Nations project that we basically had to do.
Well, it was the first time we had ever fought under the United Nations. This was the first big test, which failed miserably. And it was settled by a ceasefire, which has never been resolved, or technically still under the United Nations police action.
Well, no, so, I mean, again, if they cross us, we could just blow them right off the map, and we'd be, like, we would have, you know, we could point to it and go, look, well, we're still, you know.
Yeah, we could take North Korea on real quick, because their equipment's like pre-Korean War, and they don't have much except a lot of guys, a lot of men.
So this is another one of those United Nations thing where, like, the United Nations, like, pick. You know what it is? This is sort of like where the United Nations is like the small guy who picks a fight, and then, like, the big friend, which is us, has to go actually fight for them.
Yeah, well, we supplied about 90% of the manpower and took about 90% of the casualties, but
that's what we do.
There were a few under the United Nations. So.
All right, there you go. Thank you, Don.
By the way, that's the definitive answer.
All right, thank you, sir. That's Don. There you go.
That war is boring.
Now, really, it is true. No, it's true. Do you feel bad as I do for Korean veterans sometimes?
What's your favorite Korean War movie?
There's just MASH. That's it, right?
I suppose so.
I feel bad for.
There are tons of World War II.
This may seem like an inappropriate and crass comparison, but here's the thing. You know what it is? It's like those people that were killed on September 11th at the Pentagon that nobody really ever talks about or remembers. Like, did you ever see the Onion paper, the 9/11 version of the Onion? And the Onion put out this paper 2 weeks after the 9/11 attacks. Pretty amazing, actually, to go back and read it as a historical document. But it's like the whole front page is like, you know, holy effing S, you know, not, you know, Twin Towers blown up, you know, whatever. That was, and then, like, at the bottom, in the bottom left-hand corner, in the smallest print you can imagine, it was like, Pentagon also attacked, hundreds died. page D5. I mean, that sums it all right there. Or those people who live in Oklahoma City, you know, just like, we got blown up. Hello? People died? Ah, crap. Because there's nobody cares anymore. That's what the thing with
and
the
whatever happened
is.
To New Orleans? Is it mentioned again? Is it still there?
I don't know.
Those other states.
No, it's still in complete disarray.
I think they managed to save the white people, though. I think.
Oh, I think the white people left.
No, they're
still. And left it empty.
So we've got that, you know, that worked out. I mean,
so the white people moved elsewhere.
I believe so, but I mean, really, because once that's taken care of, well, you know, there's really no point in the media covering anything else. That really is. Once that's taken care of, the media can just go elsewhere. They can focus on other white people who are at the top of Mount Hood, like idiots.
So they brought in some sheet metal to keep those dikes from exploding.
Yes, to keep the dikes from exploding. I know, I'm five, it's funny. Let's see. Exploding dikes. Live near a buffet. Let's just get this final. Aaron, hello.
Hey, Rick. I just want to tell you the toilet shenanigans yesterday.
Yes.
Absolute gold, my friend.
Well, I do spin poop into gold, sir. It's what we do here on the Rick Emerson Show.
That's great. I'm a sewer cleaning professional, so that just really hit me right close to home.
Okay, wait, hold on. Let me just. Scotty is insisting that I play this toilet flushing sound effect because I may be five, but he is three. All right, there you go. Okay, so
I think he puts a lot of work into that.
Sadly, he does. Now here's the thing about that, smashing the toilet. You know, the thing about it is what never. It's like when you hear that, like, Elvis died and they found 20 pounds of sewage inside, or, you know, whatever, like poo inside his colon.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I sort of anticipated that all of the waste material would have been flushed away, that it would just be the phone, and that none of it would be still be lurking inside the toilet.
But you'd have to hit Elvis with a sledgehammer.
Really?
Well, you know, it goes where it goes. Hopefully most of it goes down the sewer main, but
yeah,
not all of it does.
No, it was like some unholy devil's food cake.
There's a real vile thing that happens. We clean the sewer lines with a high pressure hose, about 2,000 psi.
Here we go. Yeah.
And if you run her just a little too high, it all comes blasting back through the toilets. Whoever's hooked to the line, it comes right out of the sewer main, right back to the toilet over the bathroom.
Now, hold on. Let's discuss this in excruciating detail. Mm. So, you're there with a power hose that is 2,000 pounds per square inch. Now, where are you spraying the hose?
Well, what we do is it comes off a truck.
Yeah.
And we shoot the line or the hose up the line.
Now, but when you say up the line, where are you physically standing?
Well, we'll enter in a manhole, drop the hose in a manhole into the main line.
So you're well away from the toilet when it explodes.
Oh, yeah, always, yeah.
Fantastic.
But when there's cleaning up to do, they're not real short on where to find you.
Yeah, and so that if this happens wrong, if somebody's, let's say, in the bathroom yawning or putting in a contact lens, suddenly they are sprayed with raw fecal matter.
Well, yeah.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, I was hoping that was at the end of the story. Like
no.
some sort of like some sort of feces-filled pot of gold at the end of this toilet rainbow.
Oh, no. It goes forever, man. I'm telling you.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Take it easy.
All right. There you go. That's Aaron. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, let's go back to A again.
Yeah,
more exciting stories
okay.
here. Britain's princesses, they're princes, William and Harry are talking about plans to mark the 10th anniversary of their mother's death. In an interview on the Today Show, Prince William said, a lot of well-known performers will take part in the July 1st concert in London, the birthday of the late Princess Diana.
We've got Elton John.
There you go.
We've got the English National Ballet. Andrew Lloyd Webber is doing a exclusive sort of greatest hits.
Great.
And then we've got Pharrell Williams.
And Josh Stone. There's plenty more.
Yeah, because Princess Di was probably a big Pharrell Williams. She was a big Neptunes fan when she was, alive a decade ago.
Yeah, he talks about the 10th anniversary of his mother's death.
The service is going to include both sides of the family, our mother's side and our father's side, everyone getting together. It should be a good occasion.
Nothing says quiet dignity and grace like having your mom's memorial service at Wembley Stadium where you can score chicks afterward.
From the University of Connecticut Health Center comes Karen Steinberg, who says, start lowering your expectations for the holidays.
Done.
Try not to do more than, is possible for them.
Stay in your home. Speak to no one.
Feels like there are many more expectations placed upon them, but to try to set internal standards.
Climb on hood. Most of the stress is caused by the media.
I think certainly television, all kinds of messages that that we may be sensitive to, and I just think it takes, conscious effort to try to filter whatever the messages are.
She sounds like she's going to commit suicide.
Really, I think she's throwing a noose over the shower rod as she records it. What you want to do is just let go of life and gently float towards the warm, pleasing beam of light at the end. See, that's her swinging from the shower rod.
I thought you were a mouse.
Because she's dead.
I thought that was a donkey.
No,
a Christmas donkey.
Moving along right along here.
Angelina Jolie says she wasn't looking for a relationship when she began working with Brad Pitt on Mr. and Mrs. Smith, adding the couple remained very, very, very good friends after shooting the movie. Jolie didn't know where Pitt... Oh, she didn't know that he was married to Friends star Jennifer Aniston.
No, because how would you possibly know that?
I think we both, we were the last two people in the world looking for a relationship. I certainly wasn't. I was quite content to be a single mom. Because of the film, the way it ended, it brought us together to do some crazy things. And I think we found this strange friendship and partnership that, it kind of suddenly happened.
I guess it's wrong of me to hate Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, isn't it?
Yes.
They haven't done anything. They seem to be less crazy now. They're doing the right... They're adopting children from
everywhere.
Poor places. I guess I have to stop the hate. I guess I, Rick Emerson, have to. There is no good reason for
it's
me to hate
true.
Them.
It's true. They are becoming more likable.
And they're doing the right thing. They're doing everything that I normally criticize celebrities for not doing. So I guess officially now we will have to impose a moratorium on the Jolie and Pitt hate. Rick, growing up in an almost all Dutch community, it didn't faze me that my mother-in-law's maiden name was Dyke. After moving to Portland, my wife and I soon learned that perhaps saying my mom was a dyke before she got married was not the best way to go about starting conversations. Wah, wah, wah. Here's Tim Riley.
We have a very big religious nutcase.
Fantastic. Here's your religious nutcase watch for Tuesday.
This almost seems vast and endless. First, the father of a Muslim boy expelled for urinating on the Bible, burning pages from it, and then spitting on it.
Well, boys will be boys.
The accused boy is, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it, some kind of crazy Muslim name here, has spoken up for the first time, saying he regretted his involvement in the incident, although he claimed it was another boy who urinated on the Bible.
I was just holding the Bible down while he urinated on it.
I feel really bad at what happened. My parents always teach me to respect religions.
Clearly.
When asked why the boy would desecrate the Bible, this Muslim boy shrugged his shoulders and said he didn't know.
I don't know.
But his father, Omar, was angry at the school, which he said failed to properly supervise the boy at a rural school camp last week where the incident occurred.
You failed to have a class entitled Don't Whiz on the Bible.
So he's withdrawn the children who attend the college and says he will no longer send them to an Islamic school.
Don't whiz on the Holy Bible.
From Sitcom Springs, Arkansas, members of John Brown University are swinging in a new era since the 87-year-old Christian school decided to allow dancing on campus. The Student Government Association sponsored the Arkansas school's first dance ever on Friday, cost $2 a person. Students danced late into the night with a 20-piece band.
They did the Lindy Hop until all hours
of
the morning.
And the Foxtrot. The only exception to the old rule were folks... square dancing, choreographed dancing, was not affected by this. The new policy allows school-sponsored dances to be structured styles of movement. They can do square dancing, folk dancing, salsa, line dancing, waltzes, swing, and ballroom. The university still forbids impromptu dancing, dance parties in dorm rooms, and freestyle dancing on campus.
Of course. Next up, jazzercise. When I was in Provo, I went to BYU to see this thing called Christmas Around the World, which is actually not so terrible. I mean, here's the thing about Mormons. Mormons have good sense of production value. They know how to put on a show. I will tell you that.
It's the home of Donya Marie.
No, I really am amazed that Mormons don't make bigger inroads into the entertainment community, into like the maybe they just don't want to be mainstream. Maybe they just want to, you know, be very insular. But I'm surprised they don't make bigger inroads into the world of show business, because they do really know how to put on a massive production. But at BYU, they did this thing called Christmas Around the World, where it was a holiday-themed thing, where it was a series of dances. It was like these huge, really elaborate, like just unbelievably complex and really well-done dance routines from cultures all over the world. But the great thing about it was it was cultures all over the world, but all of them run through like the really, really tedious, boring, white BYU Mormon blender. So there was, at one point, there was like some belly dancing going on, and it was like the most Puritan chaste belly dancers you've ever seen, like covered like basically burqa style from head to toe. And then they did this... And it was sort of a timeline where you would, like, kind of go through American history and then around the world and see what dance, you know, how do they dance in countries not like ours? But there was one section where they were doing the Charleston, and they had a bunch of girls come out as flappers, and really, it's like every square inch of skin covered, and just, like, the most tentative, delicate flapping you've ever, and just, like, and really, for a dance created by and perfected by black Americans, just the whitest... blindingly white. It really was like watching. It was like watching dancing snow. It was insane. I mean, they're really just like nothing but ivory babies and Breck twins at that school.
Dateline Provo.
Fantastic.
A woman whose parents are charged with kidnapping her to stop her wedding testified tearfully that they grabbed her by the hair and told her she was breaking the commandment to honor them. 59-year-old Lamel Red and his wife Julia of Montecito pled not guilty and were ordered to stand trial after the testimony from their daughter, Juliana Red Myers. Myers said her parents picked her up August 4th, the day before she was to be married at the Mormon Temple in Salt Lake, for what she thought would be a quick shopping trip to get special religious clothing for the wedding night. Instead, they drove south and east toward Colorado, said she. They told me Perry was evil and wicked and abusive, referring to her fiancé, now her husband. They stopped by a gas station in Salina, 175 miles west of Colorado, where Myers used the bathroom. When she emerged, her parents grabbed her by the wrist and the hair, claiming she wasn't honoring her father and mother. I told them I'm not going back in the van.
I've got something in the trunk. Would you get it out for me?
They grabbed my wrist and pulled me against the wall, and they were shouting these doctrines to me. They told me, you are not worthy. You are not worthy. You are wicked. You are wicked. Then they spent the night in Colorado before returning to Provo the next day.
The home of fun. And I had that awkward moment again where we walked through, because the Mormon Temple, if anybody here ever goes to Salt Lake City, not really fun. Really, there's nothing fun about the Mormon Church in the traditional sense. It's fun the way, like a sugar-free vanilla ice cream that's been left in the sun for a while is kind of fun. It's been fun the way that, like, a bowl of unsweetened Weetabix is fun. But it really is a miracle of engineering. That's the thing. The Mormons are really unbelievably great engineers and constructors and builders of things. But they do this huge light display at Temple Square, which is the exact geographic center of Salt Lake. And they always have, and it's so awkward because I'm walking through there with my wife, and she was so I'm with my wife, B, my wife who grew up Mormon, C, we're in her hometown, D, we're at the religious center of her hometown. It is like walking through the Vatican. It is the religious center of the LDS faith. But they all, and I know they do this intentionally, they just pick like the hottest girls you have ever seen in your life to be, because when you walk through Temple Square, you are just, there are Mormon missionaries everywhere. And some of your missionaries get sent to Peru, some missionaries get sent to Cleveland, some missionaries get sent to Johannesburg, some missionaries actually get sent to Salt Lake City. And part of their mission work is to hang out at Temple Square, because at any moment, if you're walking through Temple Square, you could be like, you could turn it on. I have questions about the Mormon faith. And there's somebody like a foot away who is armed with all kinds of answers and literature and just the whitest smile you've ever seen in your life. And it's just like the hottest girls you have ever seen. And it's such a conflict of feelings to be walking through Temple Square. Because Mormon girls are just astonishingly good looking. I mean, it's like they're not even human, really. It is like they've been genetic. It's like they've been grown in a laboratory somewhere. And it's not just Mormon girls. Mormon people in general, the Mormon youth, sometimes you really ought to stroll across the campus at BYU sometime. It really is like you have fallen into Pleasantville or just Stepford or something, and they're all just amazingly blonde and scrubbed and just, it's like your eyes almost slide right off of them. They are so perfect. They all the men look like Ken Bozen, who used to work in KWJJ. They all the men look like Ken Bozen. All the girls look like, I can't even think of...
Like Katie Baker, who I used to work with?
Katie Baker, yes, or maybe one of those daughters on Seventh Heaven. That family on Seventh Heaven, that's who it is. Do you remember that Elizabeth Smart girl?
Oh, Jessica Biel?
Yes. Jessica Biel, that Elizabeth Smart girl that got kidnapped in Salt Lake. Everybody in Salt Lake, all Mormons look like that family. All right. Well, anyway, there's your religious nutcase watch. We should break. We'll come back. Dennis Fittenberger, LA Guns tickets. Stay there.